Thank you very much. It's good to be here. I have to talk really loud, and I got to talk like really fast because I have just a few minutes to knock this thing out for you. I gave you a handout. It looks really boring. You're saying, golly, you know, I got to hear about Daniel and the lions. It's not about that. I needed a handout, so I gave you that. But the story is much, much deeper than that. What I want to do in just a very few minutes is to show you something through a story that will help you to see very clearly what total commitment or contentment in life is all about. And if I could do that, wouldn't that be worth it? Amen. Because I'm going to illustrate this to you through a story. I found it myself by mistake. Because in Sunday school, they taught us all the story about Daniel and the lions. But I don't think they taught the story right. There's more to it. There's a huge story inside the story. And when I figured that out for myself, then it dawned on me why I've done such stupid things and why I've messed up so much and why I've searched for so long and found nothing. And I said, it's right here in the story. So there is a place, a biblical place, of total contentment in life. It's better than Prozac. Zoloft can't do it. Counselors can't do it. Psychiatry can't do it. Even beer can't do it. Very well. So, we got to go really, really fast. And so here's the story. And if I talk to you a little bit and ask you a question, answer me and just dialogue with me because I'll tie this together. I promise I'll tie it together and it'll take a twist that you're not expecting. You need to catch that twist because then you'll capsulize this point. And you'll probably will never forget this. I've never forgotten it since I studied this particular topic. Okay? Cool. Well, it all started with Darius. Darius is, some people call him a Mede, but some call him a king. And he was ruler over a province of 120 different sections in his kingdom. 120 sections in his kingdom. And you can follow my outline because I don't have time to talk about it. But this is chapter 6 in Daniel. In this province of 120 sections, they had administrators and assistant managers and executive directors throughout all these provinces. And then they were governed by three divisional presidents, as I call them. One of those three was Daniel, right? Well, Daniel was really the hot shot. The guy could prophesy, and he was incredibly accurate. He didn't take governmental bribes. He was steadfast. He was tough. And so Darius, who was the ruler of this kingdom, some debate whether he was actually a king or not, but he's referred to at times as a king, so we'll call him a king. I don't care. He can be anything he wants to in my story, right? So Darius then wants to promote him to be head of all the presidents, which is the second highest position in the kingdom. And the others, and this is a great business story. Now the frame starts. He gets framed, right? You see this on TV all the time. It's really cool. So the others, they get a little jealous. Well, I'm not going to be, you know, that person. And, you know, this Daniel guy's got this high standard, and we can't reach that. And let's get rid of the guy. So what do? When you don't want him, you frame him, right? It's a beautiful frame. It's a wonderful story. And so the other administrators and the executive directors and administrators, they frame Daniel. So they go to Darius and they say, Darius, shouldn't you be the only God people worship? So they refer to him as God. Now Darius is like, well, I think so. You know, after all, it's me. I rule this kingdom. So Darius put him in a place likened to a god. And they said, well, if anyone prays to another god, Darius, we want you to sign a decree. It's irrevocable decree that they will have to be thrown into the lion's den, be eaten to death. Because you should be the only god that anyone should serve. You get this so far, right? What's this story about? Tell me quickly. What does it say it?
Jealousy.
That's true, but that's not the one. What else? Real quick.
Deliverance.
That's true too, but that's not it.
Bride,
grief. That's true, and that's true, but that's not it. It's all that, but that's not it. So let's just keep going. I'll ask you again. We'll get closer. Maybe you'll figure this out. We can cut this really short, right? So Darius, who, by the way, is great buzz with Daniel. I mean, he's right-hand man. He kind of likened this Daniel guy. When Daniel learns that this decree was signed, what does he do? He goes straight calmly up to his dwelling place, which is a house that overlooks Bethlehem. He opens the windows so that all can see him, and he starts praying to his God. You remember that in the story? That's the amazing part. This is part of the stuff they didn't tell you in Sunday school. Why did he do that? Why could he have done that? Why did he walk so calmly and look out the windows and pray over Jerusalem so all could see him? When there's a decree out that says if you pray to anyone besides Darius, you're going to get thrown in the pit of the lions. Why did he do that?
Because Darius is not a god.
What's that?
Because Darius is not a god.
Because Darius is not a god. That's very true. That's not the one we're looking for, but that's true. What else? He trusted God. They told me that in Sunday school. You're absolutely correct. That's not the one, though. What else?
Total commitment.
I love it. And that's true, too. But that's not what it's about. There's another reason why he could walk so peacefully up and look over Jerusalem and pray to God. This is the part Sunday school forgot about. So let's just keep going. So now Darius signs this decree. Daniel's up praying to his God. The windows are open to Jerusalem. So now the frame people come back to Darius and say, hey, Darius, you know, this decree you signed? Well, there's this, Daniel's been praying to God over Jerusalem, and it's irrevocable. You signed this decree. So I guess, king, you got to throw him in the lions. Darius then gets totally distraught. It just dawns on him. You'd think the stupid guy would figure this out, right? It just dawns on him that he and Daniel have both been framed. He's, oh, no. So he tries to get Daniel out of this, but he's already signed this decree. He has no choice. It's irrevocable. The good thing about the time is they didn't have any lawyers to mess things up. So he had to do it, right? He had to do it. So Darius, now get your eyes on Darius for a minute. He's up in the palace, as I call it, and for that night when he had to give the order to throw Daniel into the lions, he calls off the feast. Every night there's a feast in the palace. Every night the musicians play. And this particular night, if you read the Bible and you read the scriptures, he sent the musicians home. It was the only night we know in the palace there was no feast. The chef didn't need to come. Darius, tossed and turned, doubted, didn't know what to do, couldn't sleep, was restless, because he just had his best bud thrown into the den of lions. He was framed. And what was Darius thinking anyway? I mean, why did this matter to him? You don't know that. Okay, well, how did Daniel get into the lion? He went peacefully, right? Did they have to go find him? No. They went and they threw him into this den of lions. Now, these lions, by the way, did not have GPSs on them. They were real lions. They weren't forced there by a piece of meat pulled by a pickup truck outside of the shooting zone. These were real lions, right? Bow hunters couldn't hit them. These were the real things. They were hungry. And it was known that if you got thrown into the den of lions, that you would be eaten before you ever hit the base of the den. That's how vicious this was. What's this story about?
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction. That's a good point. I hadn't heard that before. I like it. That's not it. What's this story about?
Betrayal.
It is about betrayal, but that's not what I'm looking for. What else?
Contentment.
Contentment. That's a great outcome, and that's the end of the story, but that's not what I'm looking for. What else?
Sovereignty of God.
Yes, it is about that, absolutely, but that's not the one.
Fear the
Lord. That's correct. That's not the one. So, yes.
Daniel's foundation was in God, and nothing could change
that. That's absolutely correct. That's a great point. That's not what I'm looking for, but that's good. That's all true. Everything you're saying is true. It's deeper. It's in there. It's in this story, and it can change your life. So, Daniel is in this den of lions. Darius, who, by the way, I'd like to submit to you, is really the main person in the story. It's not about Daniel, it's about Darius. It ought to be Darius and the lioness expedition. It ought to be Darius and a knight thinking about lions. Because the main character in this story is Darius, not Daniel. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So the night goes on. Darius is just distraught. You know, he's been framed, his best bud, the guy he's going to promote right below himself to rule over all these provinces is now in the den of lions. No one's ever come out of that den alive. So Darius then does what? He gets up early in the morning. The king, as some called him, went himself at early daylight to go see if Daniel was alive. Now, what's that all about?
Hope.
Hope? Yeah, that's a good point. It was about hope. Do you think he thought Daniel was alive?
No.
Well, if he didn't think that, why'd he go check?
Thought it was a nightmare.
Thought it was a nightmare? So, all of a sudden, he goes. And he goes alone. And Daniel is in his den of lions. It's early morning. He's not supposed to be alive, right? And so, he talks to him. Daniel? Hey, Darius. Dude, you alive? I'm talking. And my God has spared me, says Daniel. And I just slept the night with the lions. What's this story about?
Survival.
It is. That's not the one. What's this story about? It could affect this. That he did. You're getting real close. There's only one God, and that's true.
Be a
witness. Yeah. In Sunday school, they teach us that there was this insurmountable faith that Daniel had, right? And I think he did. I believe he had far more faith than I have. But I just want to take just a sidebar here and tell you this. First of all, Daniel wasn't God. He was a human like you and me. So he had to do some stupid things, right? He was not at all God. He was human. He had incredible faith, more than me. Because I don't think that I would just nonchalantly pace my way to that lion den, just to be quite honest with you. I think I'd go find a place to hide. But he went peacefully. And when the decree was signed, he so peacefully walked up to his dwelling in overlooking Jerusalem and just prayed so everyone could see him. As if, do you catch this? As if he expected to get caught. Don't you catch that? He made no effort to hide it.
Or it didn't apply to him.
Well, it sure did, but that's good thinking. This is the amazing part of the story. How could Daniel have done that? And for years, the answer has been, well, it's because of his great faith. I think it was. But I want to submit to you that I think it was more than his great faith. Because if I had great faith, I still wouldn't walk in that den of lions. I'm just going to tell you the truth. And if I had great faith, and I have a little faith, and I wish it were more, and I work on that. But if I had that kind of faith, I might go up and pray in my dwelling, but I'd shut the windows just to be safe. There's nothing wrong with praying safe. No, not Daniel. He opened the windows. So there's something about this that has to be beyond faith. Although faith is certainly part of this, faith has everything to do with it. It has to be beyond that. What's this story about?
Obedience.
Obedience. That's a good point, but that's not it. Yes.
Total contentment in life.
He already robbed that one, but that's a good point, and that's not it. Yes.
Courage.
It's about courage. Sure it is. He's more courageous than me, but that's not it. Yes.
Witness
is great.
Whoa.
That's not it.
Peace
that
passes understanding.
That too. It's all that.
A public declaration.
Yeah, great. Perfect. That's not it.
Power?
No, but that's a good point. Steve, you get the last one. That's too easy, Steve, but that's true. But that's not it. There had to be something else. And you can't really teach this. You have to catch it. You have to catch it. And when I caught this, it really made a statement to me. It taught me a lot about myself. I understood why I struggled for so long and how I really struggle from time to time. And it taught me why I look for things that I never find. And it taught me why I do stupid things a lot. It taught me that. Because this story is about something else. It's beyond a story of Daniel and lions. Daniel is not the key person in this story. Darius is. And it's beyond faith and the love of God. And it's beyond the protection of God. And it's beyond the greatness of God. And it's beyond commitment. It's all of that and something else. Something absolutely amazing that I think this biblical story is trying to tell us something. And you can draw it out of the story. And when you see this, you say, wow, that's it. It's life-changing. What is it I'm looking for? Well, now, that's a good point. That's not the right answer, but it's a great point. Now, at this particular point, as you read the outline, some theologians think that Darius had a conversion right then and there. It depends on where your thought is on this. Because what Darius did at that particular point, let's get back with the story and lesson me. At that particular point, he says, Daniel, your God reigns. Your God is a sovereign God. The God that protected you from these lions. Your God is God. Some think that's a point of conversion. And then Darius, as I like to say it, started outlining one of the greatest sermons I've ever read. And he preached it. He preached it. And he said that this entire kingdom from this day forth will bow to the one God, that's the God of Daniel. We will serve him and he will reign, and it's forever. His reign on this kingdom shall be everlasting. This is the God of Daniel served. He shall be our God. It was a wonderful sermon. Now, Darius didn't just speak this and write this to a handful of people. This was the entire kingdom. Catch this. This dude, Darius, an atheist, claimed himself to be God, allowed the people to serve him as God. Now you see he's at this lion's den with Daniel, and he's automatically saying, I'm not God. Your God is the God. And he will reign over my provinces. And we will serve him. And this kingdom will know God. Isn't that quite a transformation? What's Daniel doing all this time, by the way? He's sitting there next to the lions, probably going, well, about time you left me out of here. You know, I've been here all night. While you're getting your world's greatest sermon going, I'm still with these lions. And, you know, it's been a long night. So Darius then reflects back on the frame. This is kind of a cool part. This would make a great movie if you wrote it my way. And he then orders all of these administrators and all these directors that framed he and Daniel to be thrown into the den themselves. But he didn't stop there. Read it sometime when you get a chance. He said, I want all of them in the den of lions. Get their wives and throw them in there too, and their children. It's in there. And their children. And if you read the King James Version, you can see where there was gnashing of bones were gobbled before they even entered the base of the pit. These were the frame people, their wives, and their children. This is some pretty serious stuff. And this change happened. And the kingdom found out about who is the real God. What's this story about? That's pretty close. Yes.
Who has dominion?
That's very close too.
Redemption.
That too. Let me tell you. Let me ask you this one more time, and then we'll get to this point. How could Daniel have done this? How could Daniel have so peacefully, so calmly gone through this episode that he went through? He did surrender to God. He trusted God. There had to be more, though.
He couldn't do it. God did it through him.
I agree with that, and you're hitting pretty close.
Grace.
It's all of that. But there has to be one more piece. And when I saw this one piece, I figured it out. I figured out some of my greatest struggles. I figured out why I've tried so hard and done so little. You ever felt that way? I figured out for the first time why I've pushed so hard and never won the race. I figured it out.
Lack of contentment.
It is a lack of contentment, but this is the answer. It's about to come. And you just can't wait to get this.
You're right. We can't wait.
This is a story. Are you ready for this? This is a story about purpose, about your purpose in life. I want to tell you this and clarify it. Daniel had to know, he had to know what his purpose was in life in order to do all that he's done. God had to have told him his purpose. What was Daniel's purpose? It wasn't to survive the lions. Folks, his purpose was to lead Darius to Christ so Darius, who had the greatest influence, could lead the kingdom to God. Daniel's purpose was to sit second chair to teach someone with more influential power than him to find God and spread the gospel. Someone more powerful than himself. His purpose was to lead Darius to God. Now, if you study the scripture, it's going to be hard to argue against that. That was his purpose. He had to have known that purpose. Because you can't just contently walk up there and start praying when there's a decree out for you. You can't do that unless you're part God. Sure, he had faith, more than me. But he had to have known his purpose. Why? You know, I mean, Daniel was kind of used to talking to God and hearing from God because the next six chapters of Daniel is all about his prophecy and the things he saw in his revelations. There's six chapters that talk about that. So it wasn't his first chit-chat with God. So God must have instilled to him what his purpose was. That's why when the decree was signed, Daniel must have said, well, I'm on course because my purpose is to lead Darius to God. That's my purpose. It's not my purpose to rule the kingdom. It's not my purpose to take the promotion that I'm just about to get, by the way. My purpose is to be the mechanism by which Darius finds God. Because if Darius finds God, he is so powerful, he can spread the work of God faster and bigger than me. He was the most influential, the most powerful person in the kingdom at that time. It was Darius. Who better to teach the gospel than Darius? So this is a story about purpose. The lions and all the other stuff were thrown in there to illustrate the story. It's beyond lions. It's beyond faith, although all that's part of the story. It's a story of purpose. And I think it's an illustration that tries to teach us that we all have a purpose. And if you can see the outward manifestations of purpose lived, you can see it in Daniel. Because Daniel, never in this entire episode was he discontent about anything. He was always content. He was content because he knew his purpose. This, my friend, is the highest level of contentment in life, is to know your God-given purpose and to live that purpose. That is the point of contentment. That was shown in this story. You have to be living your purpose. First of all, you have one. Everyone has one. The problem is, it's not about you. And that's where we get this all screwed up. It's a story about purpose. And I got kind of thrilled when I figured this out. I said, oh, great. I can't wait to find my purpose. I'm going to do something great. And then it dawned on me, yeah, but it's not about you. Because when God gave you a purpose, he wants you, first of all, to A, discover it, and B, just so you know, it's not for you. And it's not about you. He needs you for someone else. Why would he create you? To make you happy? It's not his deal. So you have a purpose, and it's not about you. Your purpose has to be about someone else or some other people. That's why we're made that way. And when you find that purpose and you live in that purpose, and I only wish I could do this like I teach it, but I can't. I teach it far better than I do it. And I hate that about me. But when you know your purpose, you will be as Daniel was. That is the point of contentment. Because when we're created, we were created with a void that you can't fill. That void is a sense of direction, a sense of drive, a sense of accomplishment, a sense of I'm here for this reason. That is God's. He controls that. He gave you that. You can't Prozac it, Zoloft it, or drink it. It has to come from God. And He has that for you. And when you live that purpose, and when you find that purpose, that is the place in life where contentment resides. I don't use the word happiness because happiness isn't really mentioned in the Bible. That's not, happiness is not kind of high on God's list. Contentment is. Who said it's going to be a happy life? It's going to, the best is it's a content life. Content that you are in the will of God. Content that you're doing what you were created to do. And your purpose is so magnificent. It's so wonderful. And so many people say, well, I can't figure out my purpose. Well, of course you can't figure it out because you think it's all about you. You got to first get to the point where whatever it is, it's not about you. That's the hard part. It took me a lot of years to figure that out. And I still wish to sort of adjust it a little bit and see if it can't be a little bit about me. And every time I try, it doesn't work. No, Bill, it's not about you. Well, could it be? I mean, like a little bit? I mean, like, can I be a hero? Oh, you will be a hero. You'll be a great hero. It's not about you. It's for someone else. That is the contentment in life. And I also think, in these last couple of words, I think that when we live our life outside of living our purpose, those are the times that we press so hard, particularly as men, because we're competitive, we're fighters, we're athletes, we push. And we push so hard and we search so diligently for results that we don't find because we're living outside our purpose. And when we don't find those results that we want, we drive harder and we become frustrated, irritated. And I think that living outside that purpose is a major source of our conflict in life. It's a major source of our conflict with people we work with. I think it's a source of conflict with your spouse, with your children. When you're outside that purpose, you are automatically somewhat distressed. That comes out in you. That is part of an explanation of why we struggle. Why we struggle with other people. Why we struggle with where we work. Why we struggle with this, that, and the other. But yet when you get in the purpose and you live that purpose, I think that you will find that the other things of life seem to go smoothly. They seem to be less distracting. They seem to affect you less. Because at that point, you're doing what you were created to do. At that point of living your purpose, at that point, you have the peace that makes you whole. You have the component that God didn't give you, that He held from you and said, I'm going to hold this. It's called your purpose. And then I'm going to give it to you so you can deploy it and make it work. But without this thing that I'm going to hold called your purpose, you can't be totally content. You can't. Because you will constantly search. You'll constantly want. You'll constantly drive. You'll constantly force. Until you come back to me and say, how about I start living my purpose? And God says, that's a good thing to do. Let me help you with that purpose because I got one for you. I got one for you. And when you live it, first of all, it isn't going to be about you. It's about someone else. It's always about someone else. It's always that way. Now you'll find contentment. And you'll find true contentment. Because you're doing as you were designed to do. You'll do what I created you to do. You see, God didn't really need us. He chose us. He elected us because He needed us. He wanted us to help Him build His kingdom. That's why He gave you all these purposes. And they could be very, very different. But each one is magnificent. Why? Because it was created by God. And you, by the way, You're a magnificent person. The Bible says that. You were created in the image of God. You're not God. You're created in the image of God. God created you to look like Him. That's what that means. You were created in His image. So, if you're created in God's image, you got to be pretty cool stuff. Because I never known God to create anything that was sloppy. Have you? He just wanted to hold that purpose. And then He wanted to hand it to you and maybe let you discover it. But He couldn't give it to you, and He can't give it to you. Maybe you don't know what it is right now. He can't give it to you, and you can't take it until you come to the point where you say, whatever that is, I accept the fact it's not about me. I'm no longer here about me. It's about You. And when I can accept that intellectually and in my relationship with God, at that point, I can unveil that purpose. And at that point, I can do the things I was supposed to do. And at that point, I can repair my relationships. And at that point, I can lead other people. I can lead people to God. Leadership is an art. It's not a science. And if no one's following you, you're not a leader, you're just out on a walk. I teach leadership. But you can lead when you're in your purpose. Because your purpose is about someone else. That is the point when things click. That's the point when you become powerful. That's the point. That's the point when you win. That's the ultimate thrill. That's the fastest race you could ever run. That's the biggest victory in life. Because to take that victory, to grab that medal, you have done what you're intended to do. There is no greater contentment anywhere else. Thank you. Awesome.